appreciate very much the fact that you've come to share with us. We hope to impress you this morning with Jesus. So we'd invite you to open your Bible to Luke chapter 6. Luke in chapter 6 will be our study to begin as we walk through the mistakes of Jesus. Before that, though, it sure is exciting to meet Darcy Kate. And I think Crew's on his way home if he's not made it yet. My dear friend got home last night. Very good. My dear friend David Carosa and I had lunch yesterday, and he was telling me that we have 14 new adopted children in the Sacred Selections family just this year. Last year there were 28 total. And we're going to run out of songs. If you're wondering, some of us in the dark ages of 50 years ago had a songbook called Sacred Selections by Ellis J. Crumb. And some of us knew more of those songs than we did God's Psalms. And number 138 showed up back in Cason Lane, Tennessee about 6 years ago, more like the Master. And now we're already up to 434. Crew must be around 437 or 438. And so it's really neat that Bradley would jump on that and introduce Darcy Kate with her song, Beyond the Sunset. Glad to be with you. Glad to be a part of the family. Hope that you'll be encouraged as we participate together. Everybody in Luke 6? Well, let me get there. You know, somebody was telling me the other day about Bill Hall, and his whole outline was on a 3x5 card. Well, Bill Hall's always been my hero since about 1977, but I'm not sure I can just stick with the card. Will y'all be patient with me? So in Luke chapter 6, we start reading, as did Andy for us, in verse 12. During those days, he went out to the mountain to pray, and he spent all night in prayer to God. You ever spent all night in prayer to God? All night. Now, some of you, I think I see some nodding heads. I'm thinking that if you are nodding your head, it was probably because you had a parent or a child who was very, very ill. And that's why you prayed all night. And so I'm reminded every time I read this verse of my dear friend David Owen, as I from North Alabama drove up to Vanderbilt Hospital and had just spoken on this subject. He said, I now know what it means to pray all night. His son Denny at age 33 passed away. And so Jesus has a big decision to make. He didn't write an autobiography. Of the multitude of serious students called disciples that are around him early in the second year, he's going to select 12 to tell his story. He's going to select 12 men who are going to be official representatives, ambassadors for the king. They need to get it right. But when we think about who he chose, did he get it right at all? Look at the guys he chose. Jesus is extremely popular right now. Mark 1:28, Mark 1:45, Mark 3:7-9. People from all over the countryside are pressing in on Jesus. He is the biggest news that has hit Judea in a long time. And everybody wants a piece of him. Everybody wants to hear him. Everybody wants to see him. Everybody wants to see him perform miracles for themselves or for their family. And so Jesus is intensely popular in year two. He needs to get this right. Really, what he needs is someone to help him to make the best choices from the HR department. And so when I say to you, Jesus and the 11 mistakes, you understand from 1 Peter 1:22, Jesus didn't make any mistakes. I want to set your mind at ease. He didn't make any mistakes at all. In fact, he was sinless. He was without any deceit. Jesus knew exactly what he was doing, and he made exactly the right choices in the men that he chose. But from a management standpoint, from a public relations standpoint, from a politically correct standpoint, These are terrible choices. And I want you to walk through some of these with us in the next few minutes. But if we were going to get a memo from the Jordan Management Consultants, they would tell us, thank you for submitting the resumes of the 12 men you've picked for management positions in your new organization. All of them have now taken our battery of tests, and we not only have run the results through our computer, but also arranged personal interviews for each of them with our psychologist and vocational aptitude consultant. The profiles of all tests are included, and you'll want to study them carefully. As part of our service, we will make some general comments. These are given as a result of staff consultation and come with the additional fee. It is the staff opinion that most of your nominees are lacking in background education, vocational aptitude for the type of enterprise you're undertaking. They do not have the team concept. We recommend you continue your search. Simon Peter is emotionally unstable and given to fits of temper. Andrew has absolutely no qualities of leadership. The brothers, James and John, place personal interest above company loyalty. Thomas has a skeptical mind. And this is an attitude that would tend to undermine morale. It is our duty to tell you that Matthew has been blacklisted by the Greater Jerusalem Better Business Bureau. James, the son of Alphaeus, and Thaddeus have radical leanings and show a high score on the manic depressive scale. Only one shows great potential, ability, resourcefulness, business mind, meets people well, ambitious, highly motivated. We recommended Judas Iscariot as your controller and right-hand man. That comes from Communication Resources. That's exactly the way these guys would have been described today. In fact, that's how they were described today. And so let's look at some of these guys. Not to throw them under the bus, but to see ourselves in them and to think about, if God chose them, could God choose me? Could I be chosen as not only a disciple, but one who would represent Jesus to the world? And so it's so easy. He's such a big target. Let's pick on Peter first. Go back a page in your Bible. What I'd like to do right now is roam around, but I'm afraid some of you might be left behind, literally, if I got halfway down the aisle. And so I want you to just kind of read with me from Luke chapter 5. It was so exciting. I believe it was your daughters had their notepads. Man, they're firing away, writing down all those things just like they're doing right now. And just to have somebody who's going to write down these passages and think about them again and to review them. So in Luke 5, remember we talked about the crowd? Look at that. Everybody's pressing on him. I don't know if you've ever been in a big crowd. You may have been to a ball game and you felt squished when you were going out. But when we got on the subway on the bus in Bratislava, Slovakia, there was no place to stand. You didn't have to worry about falling. You couldn't fall. In fact, one of my friends, Rick, counted 7 people in bodily contact with himself while in public transportation. Now, if you need your personal space, you're going to have to leave it back here in the United States. And so Jesus is being pressed by the crowd. We're told that right there in verse 1. The crowd was pressing in on Jesus to hear God's word. See what they're wanting to hear? They're wanting to listen to God. They're pressing in on him, and he's standing by Lake Gennesaret, another name for Galilee. And he sees 2 boats at the edge of the lake. The fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. And he got into one of the boats, which belonged to Simon. And he asked him to put out a little from the land. Then he sat down and was teaching the crowds from the boat. Man, just to have a little bit of space. And you, of course, recognize that water's an excellent amplifier of your voice. And so Jesus is able to have a little space and be able to speak to the people. And then when he's done, he says, hey, Simon, let's go fishing. Go fishing? We just got done fishing. We fished all night. They're not there. Don't say they're not biting. That's not the way they caught fish. We just got our nets all cleaned up. We've got nothing, and we've worked hard all night long. By the way, we know fishing. You're a carpenter, remember? But at your word, I'll let down the nets. We'll do what you say because you say it. Wow, that might be a reason to select this guy. At your word, we'll let down the nets. When they did this, they caught a great number of fish. The nets began to tear. They had to signal to their partners, that's James and John, to the other boat to come. And both of the boats are so full, they begin to sink. And when Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and he said, "Go away from me. I'm a sinful man, Lord." Why didn't Jesus listen to him? You think Peter's lying? "I'm a sinful man. I don't deserve to be in your presence." You see, anytime we realize who God is, we see His holiness and His power, our immediate reaction is to pull back, just like it was in Isaiah 6. "Woe is me, I'm a sinful man. I live among a sinful man. God, you don't want me. I don't need to be anywhere close to you. I'm a sinful man." You think Peter's lying? Why would Jesus choose this guy? Look at who he is. He's telling Jesus, "Stay away, I'm not your man." But then you'll notice as we keep reading, he gets his buddies, their partners. They're in the fishing fellowship. "Don't be afraid," Jesus told Simon. "From now on, you're going to be catching people." They brought the boats to land and they left everything and followed him. So he's, "Where he leads, I'll follow. Where he leads, I'll follow." Really? These guys would. They didn't know where he was going. And they didn't really know what all he was about. But they were willing to follow. And don't think Jesus just walked up and said, "Hey boys, follow me." John chapter 2. They'd seen the water to wine. Luke chapter 4. Peter saw his mother-in-law who was really sick with a high fever just hop up and start cooking. Seen the demons cast out of people who were overcome by Satan. They've been listening, they've been watching, and Andrew's been telling Peter about Jesus ever since John chapter 1. Most of what you're learning in the first year of Jesus' life is in John chapter 1 and 2. You see, you're not getting that when Mark just opens on the scene and Jesus starts calling disciples. They've been listening, they've been watching, they've been observing. This fishing incident is into the second year. Jesus says, "I need you guys. I need you now. I need you to go with me." Real easy to sing, "Where He Leads, I'll Follow." Real hard to do it. So let's try a couple more here with Peter. Let's go to Matthew chapter 16. We're going to be at a couple different places here. Matthew chapter 16. Now we're in the third year. It's been at least a year later, a little bit more than a year actually. And in Matthew chapter 16, we're going to see Jesus probably as far north as he ever traveled in his life on earth. He's up at Caesarea Philippi. That's different from the Caesarea along the coast. And he's taken them there, I think, for a very intentional reason. There were lots of gods worshiped there. It was a very pagan, popular place. It's up almost as far north as Tyre. And there at Caesarea Philippi, Jesus asked these guys a question. Who do people say that the Son of Man is? Let's do a survey. Well, some say he's John the Baptist. That gave Herod some nightmares. Some think he's Elijah. Others think he's Jeremiah or one of the other prophets. They've got some pretty good ideas. They're not right, but they're pretty good. But the important question for you and for me and for Peter was, who do you say that I am? Peter is on the spot. He is ready. He's got his answer. You are the Christ of God. Who do you say that I am? See, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. You're the anointed one. You're the Christ. You're the one that God has chosen. You're Him. And don't think that God just zapped Peter with the answer. You know, he's going to go on to say, "Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven." God didn't just zap Peter with that answer. Peter has seen the miracles. He's heard Jesus speak. He observes what Jesus has done. And logically, he concludes, "You're the Messiah. The blind are seeing, the lame are walking, the dead are being raised up, lepers are being cleansed. You're the Messiah. You fit everything Isaiah said would be." Did he get it right? Is Jesus the Messiah? Man, he nailed it. He got it exactly right. But then you go on, and he says, "Don't tell anybody. that I am the Messiah. And beginning in verse 21, from then on, Jesus began to point out to his disciples, I got to go to Jerusalem. I got to suffer many things from the elders, chief priests, and scribes, be killed, and be raised the third day. No way. Can't happen. And so Peter says, oh no, Lord, this will never happen to you. Do you notice in one moment, Peter has just said, you are the Christ of God. And the next moment he says, you don't know what you're talking about. Let me tell you how to run your business. Do we do the same thing? We say, oh, I'm going to follow Jesus. Wait a second. Do that, Jesus? No. You can't be serious, Jesus. I think Peter's a bodyguard type. I don't know how you picture him. I know recent videos are showing him in that way. I think he's really wanting to protect Jesus, but it's incomprehensible in his mind that Jesus could die. And Jesus is going to tell him three times, we're going to walk through this, I'm going to Jerusalem, the Romans are going to kill me, the third day I'm going to be raised up. He keeps telling him, last few months, he's going to remind them of that. Look one more for Peter in chapter 17. In chapter 17, let's notice verses 1 through 8. After 6 days, Jesus took Peter, James, and his brother John and led them up on a high mountain by themselves. And he's transfigured or transformed in front of them. His face shone like the sun. Even his clothes became as white as the light. And suddenly Moses and Elijah appeared to them talking with him. And don't ask me how they knew it was Moses and Elijah. Peter says to Jesus, Lord, it's good for us to be here. If you want, I'll make three tabernacles here. One for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah. Now, if we were reading Luke 9's account, it says they were terrified. You'd be terrified too if you'd seen what Jesus just did. And Luke tells us Peter didn't know what he was saying. You ever say stuff when you don't know what you're saying? You know what the best thing to do when you don't know what to say? But he's terrified. And so he thinks, I got to say something. Oh no, Moses and Elijah are leaving. Hey, we'll build three tents. And of course, all kings had tents. Lion, witch, and wardrobe. They had tents. And so I got to get a tent for you, tent for Moses, tent for Elijah. Those are the three big, right? Three big, right? And God says, hush your mouth. Listen to my son. Kind of the way Hebrews starts, isn't it? Listen to my son. He is the one I delight in. He is my son. Peter, keep your mouth shut. Listen to my son. Now, why would Jesus choose a guy like that? He's a sinner. He doesn't believe Jesus when he tells him he's going to suffer. And now he's wanting to tell Jesus, this is who I'm going to worship. You, Moses and Elijah, you worship my son, God says. That's Peter. And we're a lot like him. I have a friend who describes me as ready, shoot, aim. For those of you guys who should, Brady, that's not a good compliment. Ready, shoot, aim. Oh, maybe I need to slow down a little bit and think before I pull the trigger. Our impetuous friend Peter, some of us are like him. Well, let's pick on Matthew for a minute. His name is Levi. And let's just stay there in Luke. I know we got off a minute, but there in Luke chapter 5, we could see him in Matthew chapter 10, but in Luke chapter 5, picking up in verse 27, after this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector named Levi sitting at the tax office. And he said to him, follow me. So leave everything behind. He got up and began to follow him. Again, don't think Jesus put this guy in a trance. This guy intentionally chooses. He's been listening. He's up there, it says. He's up there at Capernaum, one of the three places where the toll booths are. Capernaum, Caesarea, Jericho, those are the three big places. He's been hearing what everybody's saying about Jesus. He may have been observing some things. And so when Jesus says, follow me, he drops apparently a pretty well-to-do position to follow Jesus. Where? Jesus has nothing. Jesus is nothing. He doesn't have a place to lay his head. And Matthew seems to be a well-stocked tax collector. Now, if you're thinking of him as an IRS man and you're trying to do social media about all the new IRS agents, that's not it at all. Matthew's collecting your money for the enemy who's beating you up. Matthew's a traitor. He has sold out to the Romans and is collecting money for the Romans, and he's been told you collect so much money in this district. And whoever he can get the money out of, he'll get the money out of to pay the Romans. And one of the other problems was the Romans said, this is how much you have to pay us. If you charge a little extra, well, that's for your services. You can put that in your pocket. So lots of tax collectors were notoriously viewed as crooks and traitors. You remember the little guy Zacchaeus? He was a chief tax collector. And so this is a guy who everybody who's loyal to the Messiah, who's loyal to Jehovah, says, I can't believe you would choose him. He's a traitor. This is the worst political choice you could make, Jesus. And so think about that when you think about the next guy. Interestingly, when Matthew records the list of the 12 in Matthew 10, about verse 3, what he says is Matthew, the tax collector. He almost owns this notorious title. But if Matthew's going to have a party for Jesus, and he is, if Matthew's going to have a big banquet for Jesus, and he is, who's Matthew going to invite? Other tax collectors. Other sinners. And does Jesus come to Matthew's house for the big party? He does. Why? Because Jesus came for people like Matthew. Jesus came for people who knew they were sinners. Jesus came to share with people who were sinners. He didn't sin, but he hung out with sinners when he could speak to them about his kingdom. Just a note. In the book of Matthew, do you know how many times the word church is used? Just take a guess. Church. Pretty big, important religious word. You know how many times it's used in Matthew? I don't know if you can see this far. Do you know how many times the word kingdom is used in Matthew? I can't quite pump fast enough. 52 times. Kingdom. The kingdom of heaven is mentioned 39 times by Jesus as recorded by Matthew. What do you think he's talking about? He's telling Matthew and his buddies, I'm the king. I'm the ruler of my kingdom. I came as king, and I came to rule people whose hearts would be submissive to King Jesus. Matthew would, and probably some other tax collectors along with him. Kingdom work. But kingdom means something very different to Simon the Zealot. Matthew 10, verse 3. As a little kid, you know what I thought? I thought it was Simon the Zealot. Oh, he's zealous. Man, this is good. This guy really cheers a lot, you know. That's not him at all. Simon the Zealot's got a really special knife, and he's been working on it a long time because he's part of the Sicarii. The Zealots were the ones from the time of the Maccabees who wanted to kill anybody who was against Jehovah God and his people and their temple. And they did. And by the time of the first century, it was the Romans. And every loyal zealot would look for the opportunity to slit the throat of any Roman soldier. Now you put Matthew, who's working for the Romans, and Simon the Zealot, who hates the Romans, and you put them on the same team and watch and see if there aren't some sparks. What is Jesus thinking? He's just chosen a revolutionary. Years ago, I called him a gorilla, and the kids were confused. They thought he was an ape or something. You know, he is a terrorist. Why is Jesus choosing Simon Zelotes? Because he's looking for the king. And he may have a misconception of what the king is going to do when he gets here, but Jesus is going to straighten him out on that. These are king loyal men who are going to follow Jesus. Josephus refers to the zealots as a mere party of assassins. Josephus, by the way, was a traitor. He sold out to the Romans and decided to be a historian when military things weren't going so well for him. Assassins. Jesus is choosing an assassin to be one of his official representatives. And then you got these two guys. If you look in Luke 9, we're kind of right there around Luke. If we went to Luke chapter 9, you know, there have been some good things happening in Samaria. In fact, in John chapter 4, a whole community comes to the Lord by the influence of a woman who has a past. And in Luke chapter 9, about verse 54, we've got Samaritans. And there's a village, and he's supposed to send his disciples to get the Samaritan village ready for his arrival. But they didn't welcome him, verse 53, because he determined to journey to Jerusalem. You're not coming here to stay, are you? You're just going through here to Jerusalem. And when the disciples, James and John, saw this, they said, Lord, hey, Lord, you want us to take care of them? We'll just call down fire from heaven. We'll just torch the whole city. Don't you just love these pyromaniacs who, when Jesus is not well received, we'll just burn them to a crisp? Where do you get these guys? James and John. And it only gets worse, folks. These guys are on a journey. They're learning a lot. But they're baffled by Jesus because Jesus is talking to a rich young ruler and he's saying it's really hard for rich people to be in my kingdom. And he's thinking, man, if rich people can't get in, we don't have a chance. And Jesus says, you have your reward. But you'll notice if you read carefully Matthew and Mark and Luke, that these 12 guys are at each other's throats all the time. Maybe not all the time. I'm sure that's an exaggeration. My apologies. But their concern is, who's the greatest in the kingdom? Is it Peter, James, and John? They sure seem to get a lot of special opportunities. Who is in charge here? And so they're fighting back and forth. Mark 9 makes that very clear about who's the greatest. And every time Jesus would take a little child and sit that child in his lap and say, if you're ever going to be a part of my kingdom, you're going to have to come like little kids. They just want to be a part of the team. They don't have to have the special position. And so he'll do that over and over. And then you get to Matthew 20. If you go over to Matthew chapter 20, Luke's going to tell us about the boys and tell us about what they're doing. But I want you to notice, you could look at Mark 10 if you wanted to. I'm going to go to Matthew 20. And I want you to look at what's going on here. Think about time. Interestingly, and I had never noticed this until this morning. Thankfully, my chauffeur, my lovely wife Cindy's driving this morning, so I'm getting to cram. I mean read, study, learn. Do you notice that almost every time the battles between the disciples come up about who's the greatest, it's right after Jesus says, I'm going to die. I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to be executed. Right after that, these guys start fighting with each other. You would think that these guys would be saying, I'm so sorry, Jesus. One, they tell him, no, it's not going to happen to you. And then they start arguing about which one of us is the greatest. Every time, check me on that, will you? That'd be good afternoon homework. And so here we are. He's told them the third time, I'm going to go to Jerusalem. I'm going to die. Well, guess who steps in? James and John. And do you see who's there in verse 20? James and John's mom. That's one thing, you know, to have your brother and me. Hey, we're top two dogs, right? We get the top two positions. But isn't it really helpful to have mom step in and tell Jesus what good boys I have? Now, Jesus, you recognize these boys. They've been with you ever since that fishing trip. And they've been following you. And you know they're good boys. And all I ask is when you die, I mean, when you come in your kingdom, give them the top two jobs. Now, that's not too much to ask, is it? Jesus says to the boys. And of course, they're not boys. They're men. You able to drink the cup? Oh, we're able. Yeah. Whatever cup you drink, we can drink. They're thinking kingly cup. Silver cup, gold cup, we can drink it. But Jesus is saying, you able to drink the cup? Do you remember Jesus saying, let this cup pass from me? He's talking about the cup of suffering and death. You able to drink that, boys? Oh, we're able. They are clueless. They don't know what the king's about to go through. They haven't listened. They've heard but not listened. And so Jesus says, it's not for me to give. That's for my Father. And guess who doesn't like it? You'll really see it in Mark's account. The rest of the 10 are indignant. I used to read that like, they thought, you should never ask a question like that. That wasn't very nice. You shouldn't ask Jesus for a position like that. What I think is actually happening, knowing all of the events that have occurred before with them, is, oh, we should have got our mom to get up there and talk to Jesus. You guys jumped line with us. You got ahead of us. And so they're fighting again. And if you go to Luke 22, we're in the very last days of Jesus' life. In Luke 22, you're going to see it one more time. And in Luke 22, here we are at the supper, and the lowest slave has the job of washing everybody's feet, stinky, dirty feet along the streets. None of the disciples, none of the apostles would wash each other's feet because it would mean I'm lower than you. I'm a servant of you, and I could never serve you. You might get ahead of me if I served you. And so Jesus takes the apron, takes the towel, and starts washing their feet. And you'll remember from Matthew 20 and Mark 10, Jesus came not to be served, but to serve. Jesus is the God of the towel. You want to be a part of His kingdom? You wear the towel. You wear the apron. You wash everybody else's feet, and you don't worry about if somebody else is getting top position. You're just so busy serving the servant king, you're delighted to be a part of His family. So, Peter, Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas. Who do we look like here? Probably, if we thought about it, we'd look like all these guys. Why didn't Jesus get somebody better? They came. When He called them, they came. Not knowing what all it was going to cost them, but they came. And Jesus accepts those who will come. Now they have to come humbly with contrite hearts. They have to come with obedient hearts to serve the King. But they come. And they believe when everybody else walked away. I don't think you can imagine. We are 1 year out from Jesus' death. He is at the height of His popularity. He has thousands and thousands of people coming, and He feeds them all, and then He tells them, you got to eat of my flesh. And the whole lot of them are gone. The next day when He gets to Capernaum, they're gone. From 5,000 to 12. And He looks at the 12, and He says, you guys want to go away? I mean, now's a perfect exit opportunity. You guys want to leave? You want to bail on me? Now's a good time. And Peter says, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life. You might badmouth these guys. You might think they're a bunch of country bumpkins, and they were, except for Judas. But they were loyal. They trusted Him. Perfectly no. But boy, once the crucifixion, they're devastated. But once the resurrection, we cannot but speak what we have seen and heard. It is a totally different group of men after the resurrection. Lord didn't need any consultants. John 2 says He knew what was in man. He knew what the mind of men were. And He made excellent choices in the men that He chose. So the question is, he calls, will you come? And he doesn't make any apologies about it. He just says, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. I'm the king. All authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Now go. Make disciples. Make serious students out of people. And when you make disciples, you baptize them in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. And you teach them to observe everything that I've told you. And I'm with you even to the end of the age. So my invitation to you is Jesus' invitation. Will you come? He's calling as we stand.